Yo, what's good? What it? You already know the boys back at it again, man.
What it do, baby?
It's 12:10 a.m. This episode is about entrepreneurship. And what better way? What better setting? What better time? And to do it at, man, it just shows y'all the grind. My boy Jordan is just getting home from work. I'm just getting home from work about 40 minutes ago. Hey, man, this is the life we live. But I mean, y'all already know we do the intros, Jordan and Cam. This episode is about entrepreneurship. It's very special for two reasons. One, you know, we're both like student entrepreneurs. We both have like our own ventures, our own companies. And so we're sort of talk about those experiences. And then two, the man himself, Young Moguls, Yed Summit. My man is him, Brandon, Paige,
Leo, Alex,
everybody, man. Shout out to y'all. It's a big week for my boys up at Yed. We got the Yed Summit this week, this Saturday at NYU. And so we're also going to talk a little about that.
Thank you, bro.
I mean, just entrepreneurship in general. Like, what is entrepreneurship to you, bro? What is it?
Man, entrepreneurship, I'll be honest, is very important to me personally. Just because, you know, I sort of developed a passion for entrepreneurship at a really young age. It was just something that instantly caught my eye, really, just because to me, I see entrepreneurship as more than just starting a business or like writing a business plan, making a product. I actually see it as sort of like a mindset or like a lifestyle in terms of just the way you think, like the way you approach life. I think entrepreneurship is just having the creativity to build something of your own, to not just take something from life and from the world, but to actually want to contribute something, you know, to life and to your community, and just being willing to not just take things as they are, but to be willing to put your own spin on things. So I think it goes much further than just, you know, making a product and trying to sell it on a website, if that makes sense.
Exactly. I like that. I would say the same thing. When people think about entrepreneurship, a lot of people think about money. They think about, you know, venture capital. They think about, you know, e-commerce or something like that. They think about apps or tech or whatever. But like entrepreneurship it really takes so many different forms. And the grand scheme of things is really you're just solving a problem. So you think about Uber, like what was the problem? People didn't have taxis on demand. And so, you know, it started out with one person, you know, driving people around a city, and then they got their group of friends or something like that. And then you also have, you know, different cases. It could be something as simple as, I mean, I don't even know, people who made like water bottles, like what are we going to drink our water in? Like, why do we have cups that we can't, you know, take away from our home? So when I think about entrepreneurs, I think of them as like people who are literally solving a problem, you know, for a mass population. And they're doing so in a way that obviously is going to be profitable for them. But it really creates a situation where basically there are a lot of lessons learned on the way. And so people think that the road, I mean, with the biggest ideas, obviously Uber, you know, other companies, Lime, Bird, people think that the road was even easy for them. And with each entrepreneur, they can even tell you, I mean, somebody like Gary Vee specifically will definitely tell you, but like road has been easy for an entrepreneur. I mean, unless they were just born into money, but even then, it still takes time to like develop your idea. It takes time to find all of the right resources. It takes time to finally launch it. And so, I mean, entrepreneurship is also special to me, but, you know, I really want to just commend all the entrepreneurs out there, especially the ones that I've met at Penn so far, because I've really had inspiring conversations with each and every one of you. And this goes from like you to the people that I met, you know, in VIPC to India or anyone else. And then, you know, also the people that really reach out to me and are kind of, you know, stuck on an idea. So this podcast is for you. This podcast is for the people who, you know, might not even be interested in entrepreneurship, you know, right now, because that was me, you know, early November, early October. And then once I finally, you know, put it together in my head, like, oh, I can do this. I can solve a problem, or I have this great idea, or like, this is the problem I'm seeing right now. Like so many other people experience it. Then you put two and two together, and I mean, you're an entrepreneur. But even really before then, it's like you said, it's already in you. It's like a lifestyle, really. Yeah. It's like a different type of grind. And I think a lot of other people will tell you that. And so, I mean, one of the questions on here is, why do people become entrepreneurs? So, I mean, one of the, I would say it really like takes many different forms. Like, it's people like to solve problems. Like, that's just like one thing. You, for someone like Elon Musk, like, it's like people like to go above and beyond with what they're doing. And then some people, you know, like to, I guess, provide for themselves, and that's right. Nothing is wrong with that. Absolutely. At all. I think that people sort of get this misconception that if you're focused, you know, only on money, then that's a bad thing. And for some people, like, it's not a bad thing, because if they're providing for themselves and their family, then that's the way they gotta, you know, be.
That's facts.
So what do you think? Why do people become entrepreneurs?
I think people get into it for a lot of different reasons. And I think it sort of just depends on your personal story. I think, like you said, some people get into it because it's lucrative to make money. And I think that is a valid reason to get into it. I don't think it should always be the main reason, like long term. But I think it is a valid reason, because, you know, money is important. It's a part of, you know, the necessities of life. And entrepreneurship can be a lucrative way to achieve that goal. I think for me personally, the reason I wanted to be an entrepreneur, or the reason I get into like entrepreneurial ventures, is usually because I have an idea, or I have like a image of how I would like to receive something. And I don't really like the way other people are delivering it. And so I just sort of want to have an avenue where I can deliver it my way, not to have to listen to other people's rules and things like that. For instance, like you said, I just came back from work like 10 minutes ago, and it's great and everything, but a lot of times at work, you have a lot of red tape. You have people who are showing you how work needs to get done. There's a lot of regulations. The creativity can kind of be stifled. So sometimes you just want like entrepreneurial ventures where you can, you know, express your own creativity in your way and not have to adhere to other people's rules. And I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship. It's kind of synonymous with freedom in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people think that entrepreneurs are becoming, you know, entrepreneurs because they don't want to work a 9-to-5. But I mean, it's a 9-to-5 in a different sense. I think when people think of a typical 9-to-5, you think of like a lot of boundaries, like someone's over your head, or you're like you're at a desk or something like that. And it definitely is some sort of freedom with entrepreneurship, but you definitely have to be extremely disciplined. And whatever you're focusing on, because I mean, you have no one over you. You don't have that guidance. And so all of the progress that you make is basically, you know, on your own time, it's on your own terms. And it's really up to you what you do with your time. And I've learned that throughout, the journey with Boost, throughout, you know, being a student. I mean, that's something we learn every day, but, with entrepreneurship, it really hits at a different level. But really moving on to the next question. What are the biggest challenges with entrepreneurship? I know you can go. I know
you want to hit this first.
I mean, yeah, I'll take it. I know
you got something to say. You look like you got something to say.
Biggest challenges with entrepreneurship. I would say, I mean, definitely time. Like time, it always feels like there is never enough time. And like, I think the beauty of life is that we all have the same amount of time. Like, I mean, you know, like, we all have like a day, 24 hours in a day. You sleep however much you want. And it's really up to you what you do with those hours. I mean, some people like to get up early. Some people like to stay up late and work. But time has definitely been one thing, even when I'm waking up early or staying up late. I tend to be a stay up late person. But even when I'm doing both, I always feel like there's not enough time. And so throughout like my entrepreneurial journey, I've had to learn like how to manage my time so well, because I know how valuable it is. Another thing I would say is definitely motivation. And I've listened to like a lot of podcasts in general. I've listened to like a lot of entrepreneurs speak, and just in videos in general. Gary Vee, there's John Henry from Harlem Capital.
I know you're a big John Henry fan.
Yeah, I'm definitely a big John Henry fan.
You got to get him to listen.
Exactly. I'm going to shoot it his way. I was talking to him last week, actually. He responded to one message and left me on red, but that's okay. But, I mean, he was talking basically about, like, everyone has their own sort of motivation for what they're doing, whether it's just life in general or if they're focused on a specific goal. But even if you have that motivation, it might not always be there at a specific point in time. So let's say, you know, my motivation is buying my mom like a house, but I'm not always thinking of that or something like that. Or you just have, you know, some self-instilled motivation. And he was saying, like, what separates, you know, the most successful people from, you know, people who are a little bit less successful, with, you know, if obviously if they have like the same amount of resources and stuff like that, is what do you do like when you don't have that motivation? Like, how do you keep going? And he said like that was the thing that set him over the top. So I would say definitely I've had to, I would say battle sometimes with like a lack of motivation to do work.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like in the long run, I know that, you know, eventually it'll pay off. And so obviously you just have to keep your eye on the prize. Like, you have to stay focused. You have to know that there's like a bigger picture and that you can't be so narrow-minded. Because I think a lot of people, and this isn't just with entrepreneurs in general, but like students, we get to like problems and then we sort of fold, or like, we think that, you know, that's the end. But obviously, you know, it's just a wall, and there are multiple ways to get over the wall. It's just about like, how do we get over the wall, even if we don't have the motivation to do so? Like, you still got to keep moving, even if you don't feel like it. So those are like two things that I feel like have been the biggest challenges with entrepreneurship for me. But you might have something different.
Yeah, bro. I really want to build on what you're saying on the first one as far as time. I mean, because what you said is true. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody has the same 24 hours. And it's really just like, what do you do in your 24 hours that you're given every day? I think the common misconception with entrepreneurship is everybody thinks, oh, I don't want to be in the office working 9 to 5 or whatever your hours are, even if it's longer than 9 to 5. I'd rather run my own business. And people think that running your own business means it'll be less hours. I actually think that usually, especially in the beginning stages, if you're running your own business, it very well might be more work and more hours than a regular 9 to 5 job, just because it's like sometimes entrepreneurship, the thing I feel, and maybe I should control this better, but a lot of times it never ends because it sort of follows you everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's like your child. It's like when you go, you know, to play, or when you go to work out, it's on your mind. When you go to bed, it's on your mind too, because you got these ideas. And it's never like you leave the office and you can just shut that down.
Yeah.
I feel that. So I think people should definitely understand that just because it's not a 9 to 5 doesn't mean it's going to be easier. It might be more fun and you might be more passionate about that work, but it's definitely still going to require the same amount of effort. I also want to say that I think that another big challenge with entrepreneurship is the whole idea of like accountability and responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no running from it in entrepreneurship, and I think that's really unique, but I think it's really good too. Like in a regular job, working in corporate America, you can say what you want, but most times, unless you're the top head person, you're kind of able to duck a lot of the responsibility, right? If you're at a big company and they don't do well on earnings or they don't perform well that quarter, you can probably sort of hide and escape. It's like, that's not my fault. That's the manager's fault. Like, he should do a better job. Mm-hmm. She should do a better job. When you're an entrepreneur and you're running the show, you're calling the shots, that's a privilege to be able to do that, to have that ability to call the shots. But that also means that, like, the buck stops with you on everything. Everything is literally your fault. If something's not going right, they're gonna go to you because you're the point person.
Exactly.
So I think that's definitely an important lesson I've learned, but it's definitely a challenge because there's no running from the blame in entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, you're the one answering all the questions.
Facts.
You got to do the research. I mean, even if you have team members, y'all are still doing y'all's own research. Y'all are still answering y'all's own questions and then collectively coming together as a group. But man, that's a great point. What for you? Let's talk about Young Moguls. What was the catalyst? Because I know you started with Young Moguls at an early age. You and Brandon go way back.
Shout out to my boy, B.I. I haven't given him a shout out on here. But shout
is
out
he
to
coming yet this week or no?
Nah, he won't be here. Okay, he's in Atlanta. But shout out to Brandon Iverson.
What was the catalyst that gave you the confidence to pursue, to start your own clothing brand?
So
or to pursue Young Moguls brand, my bad.
That's interesting. I'm interested to hear your reason as well. I would say my reason, a lot of it, I actually owe Brandon a lot. I think I don't give him enough credit due for sort of like having, so to give context, me and, you know, my best friend Brandon Iverson, we definitely, like, we grew up together basically. I've known Brandon since I was born. Our parents knew each other before we were born. We were born like 6 days apart. So I think growing up with someone like Brandon, who was always sort of super creative, always had like an idea that even when we were young, like even if it was a stupid idea in school, like we always just had ideas, and he was always the one that sort of wanted to, you know, collaborate. He was the person I would go to work on just random stuff. So I think from a young age, we definitely had, it's sort of like a partner in crime to think like, okay, if we got an idea, like we can jump in this together. I think the catalyst for starting it was actually, so sophomore year was really important of high school. That's when we started it. And we had just wanted to just promote some type of movement. And we wanted it to be, you know, we said there was a lot of clothing lines. There still are now that it's like dope clothes and whatever, but at the core, it doesn't really have a meaning that's sort of purposeful in a way. So we knew we wanted to have something that merged the gap between, oh, it's cool designs, it's like aesthetically pleasing, but it also like says something at the end of the day that hopefully inspires or resonates with people in some way. So I think that was the start of it, and sort of the goal of wanting to build a brand around something that we consider like our core ideals, and sort of turning that into a lifestyle that we thought other people could relate to. But I think that a lot of that entrepreneurial drive that I have now was definitely because, you know, having a partner and a friend like Brandon growing up, who was always just as curious as me and wanted to just start stuff. And I see the same in you and Brandon Moore and the rest of our YED team. It's just being around those curious people. That's like a catalyst for me, because it always gets you thinking on the next big thing, and having people who actually want to like do and create. That's just super inspiring to me.
Yeah. Man.
All right.
Yeah.
So what's yours? What's the catalyst that gave you the confidence to start Boost? Or even like this podcast and stuff.
So my whole thing, you know, now that I think about it, I mean, I think the reason that I hate Kevin Durant so much is because I love Russ. I love what he stands for, man. I remember, actually, I think Under Armour, I used to wear these Under Armour socks. It was like, why not, or something like that. But I know Russ has like that phrase right now. But I think Under Armour used to do something like that. And I've always been about that. I mean, I've had the idea with Boost specifically in my head since probably like last June. I remember last summer when I was in Philadelphia doing research and stuff. I was talking to my boss about it. I was talking to other people about it, and they were like, oh, that's a great idea. Like, I might steal it. And so I was like, huh? Like,
and this was from like personal experience?
Yeah, I mean, this is really just for me, like, thinking, like, damn, we don't have anything like this.
Because
like,
you also live far on campus. You live kind of far from campus.
Yeah, but that wasn't it. It was, like, during the day, because, I mean, I was pre-med at this time. I was going from, like, DRL to Lighty Labs. I was also an athlete, so I was having to go back and forth, you know, just doing whatever. And so I was like, man, like, we don't really have shit like this on campus. I mean, like, we just have to walk around campus. One thing that really stood out to me was I remember going to Harvard and they had like their shuttles during the day. And I was like, man, we need something like this. Like Penn doesn't do that. I know a lot of schools don't do that. And eventually I'm like, I really started to think about it. I'm like, this is a great idea. Like, why am I not doing this? Like, what's stopping me? And so it really just became a theme of that. Even with this podcast and really anything I do now, like if I think it's a good idea or if I think it's going to maybe bring me up a different level, it's like, what are the benefits? And then, you know, what are the disadvantages of doing this? And obviously if the benefits outweigh the disadvantages, then, you know, like, it's like a clear answer. And for, you know, going with Boost, I mean, it's like I get to explore something new that I've never really, you know, dove into. You know, I get to meet new people, obviously. I get to, you know, make money in the long run, hopefully.
Yes, sir.
And then the disadvantages, obviously, was like I'll have less time. But, like, that's never really a disadvantage for me because you can always make time. I mean, it was really a clear answer. And like, I just wish that I could, like, get the message through to other people who are still on the edge with whatever idea they have. I know so many people – just reach out to, you know, older mentors or something like that, and they're sort of curious about doing something. And then you can really just tell in the way that they talk, like they're like, I don't know, or something like that. I mean, the worst thing that happens is that like it fails, but like this isn't your life. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you won't die from doing this. You won't lose any friends from doing this. Hopefully, like, it doesn't, you know, hurt your grades directly or something like that. So, I mean, the worst thing that can happen is that it just doesn't work, and that's okay.
Yeah. But
if it does work and you never did it, then you just wouldn't know. So it's like, you have to be able to take those risks. You have to be able to accept the challenges, and ultimately you just can't be scared whenever you're going with something. And that's one thing that I really learned, when dealing with Boost, when dealing with podcasts, when dealing with like just reaching out to people in general. You want to be very intentional. And just like, I mean, the worst thing that people can say is no.
Yeah,
like, if you're asking for money, they just saying no. Like, it's not your mom saying like, oh, like, no, get out of the house. Like, it's
nothing personal.
Exactly. It's nothing personal. I mean, we got to get that through to some people. Like, you can't take everything personal.
But I'm sure you, because it's, well, first of all, I want to say it's been really fun for me watching you guys expand and grow so much, especially so quickly. And I'm happy to see it, because I know how much work you guys put into Boost, you, Noah, Isaiah. So I think that's been great for me to watch. But yeah, I just think that's an interesting perspective for me to watch, seeing it from the beginning stages to seeing to where it's like grown now so quickly. Because yeah. I remember being on campus when you were sort of like coming up with the idea and like pitching it and stuff like that.
Yeah, man, I remember it too, bro. I think one big turning point for me, and like, I mean, regardless of whatever I end up doing, like after graduation, I really like have to pay my respect and just appreciation to like everybody who I met like on that Weep trip that I went to.
Facts.
Whether it was the professors, my TA, man. I ended up reading this book called what was it? When Breath Becomes Air. My TA sent me that. I ended up watching a couple of videos that he sent me. Lori was an amazing professor. I talked to Jeff Weinstein at Stripe. I literally have this man's note. He's like, what the hell are you waiting for? Just do it. Like, it's on his notes. Like, do Scooters now. Some shit like that. But I mean, that was like the real turning point. I think that's when I finally like realized, like, oh, I mean, I'm like, I go to Penn, like, right. I have all of these resources. Why am I not taking advantage of this? Like, why am I not doing it now? I might not ever get this opportunity again. Like, I might not even be alive tomorrow.
And exactly. So
that's kind of how I want to live now. It's just like, why not? Like, you have to take those risks. You can't really live your life in fear.
That's facts,
so,
bro.
Yeah, that was a thing for me.
That's facts.
Shout out to my man, Jeff Weinstein.
What's up, Jeff?
At Stripe. So I basically went in there at Stripe. I didn't even know what I was going, but I was like, man, I don't even care. Like, I just want to meet with this guy, like, let him tear my idea apart. And we ended up talking. He was like, so the two co-founders of Stripe, I think they're brothers, but they're 29 and 30.
Okay.
But one of them is like the youngest billionaire ever, or something like that. He was like, man, like, these guys, they don't have any fear at all. Like, you're talking to me like you're scared.
Because you
like,
don't take
you
it personally.
Do
you know
it
what I'm
now.
Saying?
He's like, whatever you're doing, you need to do it now. What you have right now, this is bull crap, blah, blah, blah. He's like, you need to be doing it now. You need to go harder, blah, blah, blah. He sent me like these essays, and I was like, all right, man, like, that's it. That's all. I was like, that's all I need to hear. He gave me a couple of books, a couple of shirts, and I'm like, that's all I need to hear. So, I mean, that was like the turning point for me. It was really like a change in mindset. I think sometimes you might.
Sometimes
like,
that's just what you need. You need someone to change, yeah. That shift your perspective.
They need that switch in gear. But I mean, what does it take to get funded? Let's talk about the little throwback when you and Brandon were on Steve Harvey. How did y'all even come to that?
So I'll do like the quick story. So high school, junior year, Brandon went to this program. That's this mentorship program called Disney Dreamers Academy. Basically, it's a mentorship program that Steve Harvey does every year with Essence Magazine. Okay. Basically, they choose 100 high school students. They fly them down to like Disney World, and basically they just go through this whole week long of like empowerment. They bring a bunch of black celebrities, entrepreneurs, like well-known people, and they just shower these high school students with empowerment and basically just give them sort of the exposure to see what's possible by introducing them to a lot of figures who they're not usually shown in their environment, right? So Brandon went our junior year. He didn't tell me he was applying, so I'm just like, I'm looking on his story on Snapchat and stuff, and I'm like, how is Brandon like meeting Steve Harvey and meeting all these people? And so he tells me, oh yeah, I applied for this program, you should apply next year. I'm like, okay, bet. So I applied next year, and you know, I was blessed to be chosen. And so I went, and man, it literally, like, to this day is probably the most life-changing experience I've ever had, just because of the people I met there, the lessons I learned there. It just exposed me to like seeing people on a different level of success who have just had a different mindset. And I haven't been the same since. So when they noticed that Brandon and I knew each other and actually had a business together, they thought that was really interesting. And they wanted us to come on Steve Harvey's show to basically talk about how we started the idea and how Disney Dreamers impacted us and helped us, you know, advance that business. So, I mean, that was the opportunity of a lifetime. And Steve Harvey has been one of our like role models, people we look up to. So that was just a special experience. And he even gave us like $5,000 on the show.
I was going to ask specifically about that. I mean, why do you think he gave you all that $5,000? What did he see in you guys?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I really don't know. I think he saw the drive to sort of like you were saying, like we didn't have it all figured out. We knew we were just kids and we there's a lot we didn't know, but we didn't let what we didn't know stop us from at least trying and saying, okay, we don't know everything. We're going to mess up, but we're at least going to, you know, try to do something and put something out there. And I think he respected that. Especially, I think he respected it because of his own grind. Like he's someone who, going through that program and getting to sort of see him on a closer level, I think people don't really understand how hard he works with all the variety of the things he does and all the things he has his hand in. So I think when he sees people who just have, like you were saying, the courage to step out and be a little bit vulnerable and just go for it with your idea, especially at a young age, I think he respects that. So, I mean, that was definitely a blessing. But I think more important for us was doing crowdfunding before Steve Harvey, or else there would have never been any product if we weren't, you know, brave enough to put our idea on Indiegogo and show people, look, we got these designs, we're trying to raise some money. But what would you say? I'm interested to hear your perspective, because I know I think you've gone through more of a formal process of pitching and trying to get funding and things like that. How would you describe that process?
I was very new to all of this, all of the experiences that, you know, I've gone through, whether it be pitching, whether it be just talking to investors, or, you know, reaching out to advisors, getting advice. But in my experiences pitching, I mean, we've been, you know, lucky enough to have received a couple awards in our short time of being a company. But I would say, all of the judges that we basically presented to were very, very, very particular about like how well you know your area, how well you know your numbers, and then also the team behind your venture. And that it seems like with investors, with people that, you know, we talk to, or people that are brought in front of us, they say, you know, you could have a great idea, but I mean, a lot of people have great ideas. It's about executing. And to execute, you do have to have a good team. So I think it's definitely important to surround yourselves. And I mean, like I said, I feel like all of this really comes full circle. Because like some of the lessons that we learn in entrepreneurship also resonate in just life experiences. But, you know, to get funded is definitely important that you have, you know, a strong and very knowledgeable team around you, because you could have a great idea, but, you know, what happens when, you know, your teammates are lazy, or what happens when they're slacking off or they're not doing their stuff? And, absolutely, you know, they get, you know, focused on other things. And so I think people, investors specifically, want to see that dedication and drive and team members. And I think that's important ultimately for a company to get money. Hopefully, you know, we can get in that situation very soon.
There's much more to come.
My boy Isaiah has a pitch this weekend in Las Vegas. So wishing him the best of luck there.
Good luck, Zay.
But yeah, man, I mean, I think this is a good one too, because I mean, there are so many entrepreneurs out there Isaiah, I remember we had an interview with like Weiss Labs, and Isaiah said, like, they were asked this, who's your favorite entrepreneur? And Isaiah said, like, this entrepreneur that I did not know at all. But I mean, that just goes to show, like, there are so many people doing their own stuff, amazing things. But favorite entrepreneur, who would you say?
That's tough. That's a tough question. So most of my favorite entrepreneurs are actually not usually the ones you would think of. I think most people think of like the tech people or people who have really big startups. To be honest, I'm really interested in entrepreneurs who master the starting businesses at the intersection of business and culture. So I would say, honestly, some of the top entrepreneurs I look up to, one is definitely Oprah. Like, I have a really, really big respect for Oprah. I don't know in the mornings if you hear me listening to Oprah every morning, but it's like an every morning thing. But I'm just a big fan of Oprah because I love individuals who sort of are able to be category killers. That's how I would describe her. Like, a lot of people, you know, do one thing really well and they stick to it. But Oprah is really unique because she can do so many different things. So it's almost like, what do you label Oprah as? Like, she's a media mogul, but she's also an author. She's also a public speaker. She's also, you know, a ton of different things. So it's hard to just box her into one thing. That's also why I like entrepreneurs like LeBron. Like, I see the most respect I get from LeBron is what he does off the court, because of how you can never just label him as a basketball player. Like, he does so much more than just basketball. And I think that's a really unique thing. Steve Harvey is also a really one of my favorite entrepreneurs because he sort of does the same thing. He's got his hand in so many things. You can't just box him in. So I think that's the common trend between some of my favorite entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I like that. I like the LeBron one. I like that.
I know you're a LeBron stan.
I'm a big LeBron fan. LeBron's definitely up there for me, just favorite people in general. I would say one big person that I've become a huge fan of recent is Jay-Z.
Facts.
Jay-Z, I mean, his journey in particular as an artist, as a businessman, I mean, we've literally like watched this man go from 500 mil to like a bill.
Yeah.
I mean, we aren't fortunate enough to just experience the beginning of his time. Yeah. But I mean, we watched a good chunk of it. And I think it just goes to show that it doesn't really matter where you start. It's about where you finish. And I think that there's not even an end that's, you know, close for him. I think he has his eyes set on like such a bigger prize. And we can sort of see that and what he's doing with prison reform, fighting for, you know, African-American justice, partnering up with Meek Mill. You know, he's just doing so much. I mean, and I think I see similar characteristics between him and Elon Musk. Elon Musk is also like another one of my favorite entrepreneurs, and how versatile they are and what they do. Like you said, Oprah's a category killer. I think these people are as well, in the sense that they're not focusing on just one thing. You get a lot of people who think that, you know, if you build an app, then you have to stay with that app. Or if you enter a certain industry, then you have to stay in that industry and you can't dwell out of that industry. But like, I think there are so many people that are like just defying that. I mean, that's not the case. Like, you can do so many things if you set your eyes on the prize. Jay-Z has been a perfect example of that. And I think Elon Musk has also been a perfect example of that. And then for Elon Musk, in another sense, his dedication to what he's doing is just unmatched. I mean, this man has like not taken a salary from Tesla. He's like, obviously he's gotten in trouble for like smoking weed and stuff on TV. I mean, weed is legal now, so like, I don't think that really matters, but like him not taking a salary from Tesla, I think that just shows his dedication. I mean, obviously he's a rich guy, but like, how many people don't love to be, you know, the richest man in the world? I think once he ends up taking a salary from Tesla, when they reach like a certain market cap, then he will be the richest man in the world. But I mean, just that alone shows his dedication to making that company just among the most elite. And I mean, I think that he's just unmatched just as a visionary. He's unmatched just like as a crazy person, but like he's doing what he loves. and like he has no limits. And then another person just with a great story, and I think he's another one of my favorite entrepreneurs just because he's so real and he really talks about his grind, and it's like a real grind, like it's not one of the BS grinds. And that's Gary V. I mean, Gary V is like, man, you just hear the story, like, man, the man came to the United States when he was a child. Like he worked at his parents, liquor shop or something like that. And then like he ended up doing his research on wines, and now he owns like he's like this big wine connoisseur. But like, I mean, he just keeps it real with people. He talks about like just embracing certain risk and like just taking them head on. I really mess with that. Like I listen to this man very weekly. I listen to him a lot. I mean, he sort of put John Henry on too with you know, VaynerMedia and stuff like that. So I think that's a good collab right there. That's definitely a good partnership right there. But yeah, I would say those are my three for me.
That's a good three.
Yeah, I think that's like LeBron, KD, Carmelo right there. But man, this is what I've been waiting for. The biggest event of the summer.
Let's get into it.
I'm ready to meet some new people, some new entrepreneurs, some people who are interested in entrepreneurship, but they need that extra motivation. Tell us about YED Summit. What is YED Summit and what should people expect?
Yeah, so YED Summit stands for Youth Entrepreneurs Diversity Summit. And this is an initiative that we ran for the first time last summer. And so basically I run this company, YED Corp, with four other team members. You know, we got Brandon Moore, Leo Maranta, Paige. I'm blanking on Paige's last name. I'm sorry, Paige. And then Alex Motley. Paige is going to kill me for that because I know she listens to this religiously. But shout out to Paige. But yeah, basically we started this initiative last year from personal experience. We've been to a lot of other conferences for students and things like that that I think have really just dropped the ball in terms of providing value in the way students really want to see it packaged. I've gone to a lot of conferences where there'll be 500 students in the room and we just sit at the same table for hours and get lectured and leave the event and never have the opportunity to meet other people and tap into that network. So our mentality with the YED Summit is that we're college students ourselves. We can take control of it and plan it in the way that we know people our age group, you know, want the format to be, and bring the speakers that they want to see as well. And overall, just bring this whole day of good vibes, good energy, good collaboration, and good learning. And hopefully these students will leave inspired. I'm personally really excited for it now because I'm starting to see people sign up that I don't know. And that's what really gets me excited, because at the same time, this is something I've started because I want to meet new people too. And I want to, you know, create those new relationships. So this Saturday should be a fun day.
It should be fun, man. I'm excited. To meet new people.
Thank you, man.
What do you think? What do you think are the ways that people can make the most out of this year's summit?
I think
it's going to be a big crowd.
I think it's going to be a big crowd.
Some big speakers.
Some really cool speakers. We got speakers from a lot of different industries, whether it be media, whether it be in sports, whether it be in advertising, finance. We tried to make it a diverse set of speakers in terms of their backgrounds, ethnicities, genders, whatever it may be, and also in terms of the industries that they come from. I think that for the attendees, the way they get the most out of it is just to come, and we say this on the show a lot, but to just come and be vulnerable. Like, while you're here for these few hours, leave the ego aside. Don't be afraid to meet people. Put yourself out there. Because honestly, last year, the beautiful thing about it is I've seen some people who came last year and were vulnerable enough to meet and just introduce themselves. And it's been awesome seeing how that relationship stayed in touch and how people met business partners, how people got jobs from sponsors, things like that. So I think just come, bring good energy. I think that's the biggest thing. Just bring good creative energy. And if everybody does that, it'll always be a good event.
Yeah. And if I could throw an extra point in, don't come feeling like you can only learn from the speakers or people who are on a different, you know, pedestal that are already accomplished entrepreneurs. A lot of the students that are coming are extremely versed, extremely well versed in what they're doing and have already accomplished amazing things themselves. So like, I mean, you can literally learn from anyone that's going to be in the conference. And so I think that's a huge pro of going to this year's summit. I mean, we're in New York City.
I think that's the most value, bro. People always want to, you know, track down the speakers after this session and try to get a picture. I think the most value is, can you meet all these different attendees in the building who have a variety of different talents? And you never know where they'll be in 10 to 5 years. Like, the speakers are established, they're successful, but you have the opportunity to connect with some people who might be doing some really great things in the future and get in on that relationship on a deep level.
Exactly. All right. What are you, this is the last question, what are you most excited about?
So a few things. First of all, I'm very excited specifically about this fireside chat we're having with Paul Rivera, mainly because I told you LeBron is one of my favorite entrepreneurs. Yeah,
tell them who Paul Rivera is, because some of these people might not know.
So basically, Paul Rivera was a Nike exec for a long time, which is how he sort of created a strong relationship with LeBron. And he also has his own sort of lifestyle brand and advertising agency called Run With The Winners that you probably see LeBron wear a lot. So basically, ever since years back when he was with Nike, he's created a really strong relationship with LeBron. He's been doing his own ventures on his own. And one of the favorite things I've seen him put out is the show called The Shop that I'm a huge fan of. I love that show. And so I'm really excited just to ask him some questions about, you know, not just about his affiliation with LeBron and stuff like that, but just sort of how he even, you know, paved his way at Nike and made a name for himself at such a big company. I'm really excited for that fireside chat. I think he'll have a lot of great wisdom to share. And honestly, like, I'm genuinely really excited just to meet new people, because I think a certain type of attendee comes to this event. Someone who's willing to, on a Saturday, come to an event to learn, I think that already shows you that this is a special type of person. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of person that I want to get to know and add to my network. So like I was saying, like, at first it's cool seeing my friends buy tickets. Like, I appreciate you buying tickets and, you know, our roommates, our friends from school. But I really get excited when I start seeing people get tickets that I don't know, because then I think that's where the value comes in, when people aren't just seeing, you know, people that they already know, but this is new people that they can meet. So I'm excited to meet new people. I hope people have the same.
Exactly. All right, brother. Well, if you haven't bought your tickets yet,
get your ticket, man.
How many tickets are left?
So we're going to do like 25 more tickets, a little less than 25. And that's just for general admission ticket. We do still have like VIP tickets. But if you want to get a ticket, I think you should go to yedsummit.org right now. Secure your ticket. It'll be a fun day.
Okay.
Cam will be there. You should come meet Cam.
I will be there. Come meet me. I will be in a fit. But yeah, man, I mean, hopefully we dropped y'all with some more keys in this podcast. For the people who are on the edge, hopefully we push y'all a little bit closer to pursuing whatever it is that you want to pursue. For the people who are not even interested, hopefully we sparked that little bit of interest that, you know, you might start thinking outside of the box and whatever you think there's a problem in. And then, I mean, that's really it. I do have a couple shows to recommend. I mean, you talked about The Shop. There is this one show, and this is John Henry's show, sponsored by Cadillac. It's on Vice, and it's called Hustle. So go look it up. It's Vice Hustle, sponsored by Cadillac. John Henry, he basically talks about, or he actually, each episode is with like a different company in the New York area. He's a part of Harlem Capital, which is a venture capital firm that invests in minority entrepreneurs. So whether this be women, black, brown entrepreneurs, LGBTQ community entrepreneurs, whatever it may be. So they're focused on investing in minority entrepreneurs, and they're doing a fantastic job just creating a different platform for entrepreneurs to be successful. When you think about the entrepreneurs that are dominating today, you don't see a lot of minority faces. And so, you know, their goal is to, I think, invest in 1,000. I don't know. I don't know the numbers, but it's a lot of entrepreneurs in the next 20 years. And
that
I think they're doing a fantastic job. Yeah, hopefully. I mean,
you're listening. That could be you.
Exactly. That could be you, man. But yeah, check it out. Hustle on Vice by John Henry. Any other books I said, I think When Breath Becomes Air is definitely a good book. There's a couple, Matt. Let me go ahead and look at my.
Are we giving book suggestions?
Man, go ahead and give a book. You can give a book. You can give a video suggestion.
So I've been into podcasts lately. I told y'all I love Oprah. Oprah Soul, Super Soul podcast is a really good one. Gary Vee has some really interesting podcasts. Let me think. What else? Some favorite books. I would say I would say Good to Great is a great book. I would say The 360 Leader, John Maxwell is a really great book. I could go on for days with books. Let me think. Cam, you got any other books? Oh, Originals is a really great book. Originals is a really great book, also by a Penn professor. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites. There's that marketing book by that one Wharton professor, that, you know, that orange book I'm thinking of? Nick would know.
I think Pulumi has it or something. I don't know.
Power of Habit. The Power of Habit. It's a great book. You look like you got a list on here.
Yeah, man. I got a couple things. These are actually speeches, and I listened to these, I think, right before school ended. But like I said, my TA that I met on the Wharton Industry Exploration Program in SF, he sent us a list of stuff. This is speeches, you know, lectures, articles, books, that basically changed his mindset. And so I think two of the biggest ones that definitely helped me out and sort of sparked a different grind in me. One is The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch. I hope I'm saying his name right. I think he was diagnosed with some sort of cancer, ended up dying specifically, very soon after. And so he gives his last lecture at Carnegie Mellon. And I mean, it's really just a great speech. Like, I was like, God dang, like it was crazy. I mean, I think it'll really change your mindset on like how valuable time is. When Breath Becomes Air is a similar thing. It's about a neurosurgeon who ends up having cancer, and he talks about the meaning of life and what life means to him. And then I think another one, and this will be my last one for the night, the speech to graduating Harvard Business School students by Deepak Malhotra. He's a Harvard Business School professor. I think he's a negotiations professor. I have a couple of his books, but he also just gives a good speech on happiness and quitting. And I mean, it's just an important speech that some people might need to hear. But I mean, that's all I really have for tonight, man. I'm excited for this weekend. Hopefully I get to shake hands with Paul Rivera.
We'll make sure that happens.
Alex Wolf.
Alex Wolf is dope too. She's so dope.
Other people. Jordan Williams, Brandon Moore. I mean, I don't know. That's the last
person you need to meet.
Those are a few names, but like I said, man, y'all know the vibes. Tune in next week or in a couple of weeks. I don't know when we'll drop the next episode. If you want to be in the next episode, if you have any ideas, hit us up. Hit up my man Jordan. Hit up my man Jordan on Instagram. Hit me up on Instagram. You know. But you got anything to say, bro?
We'll see y'all in the next episode. You feel me?
All right, man. Peace out.
Y'all be good. They gave us pork and pig intestines. You discarded that we ingested. We made the project away. You came back.